to remind you, and tonight our main speaker is a good friend of mine, Hal Ahrens.
My name is Hal Ahrens. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. It was wonderful to look over this beautiful audience, see the smiling faces, and know things of men I haven't seen in some months. And equally important to see the smiling faces of a lot of brand new things that I never met before tonight. But that's what this program's all about, ladies and gentlemen. I have over 2 million real close friends of mine located in 134 countries around the world. The majority of whom I have met yet, but they're there. And what a wonderful feeling, what a heartwarming feeling. What peace of mind, serenity. What a security blanket to know that I can walk into an OA meeting in 134 countries around the world and find the same love and compassion and understanding I find in this room. To borrow a phrase from Keith Carton, that's fantastic! And it is fantastic. I've been known to tell stories at old meetings, but I heard one I haven't heard in 20 years, so bear with me. Catholic family, Protestant family next door, our kids grew up, very good friends. Charlie's a Catholic boy. Billy was a Baptist, played football together, Boy Scouts. We go, Charlie, why don't you come to my church some Sunday? Didn't do it, but you can come to mine. And the next time I go to your church, they're fine. They went to the Catholic church, and I started, the altar boys came up, and they said, what are those kids doing up there on the altar? They said, those are altar boys. They're helping with the service. A few minutes later, the priest came up, and they said, what's that guy doing up there in a dress? I said, that's not a dress, that's a robe. It's the priest. He conducts the service. Next time to the Baptist church, John gets up and starts talking, and Charles said, who's he? He said, he's the superintendent of the Sunday school. He's arranging some meetings for the kids, for the youth activities, the BYP. He said, what's the BYP do? So the first year, it's the Baptist Young People's Union. But on the first, they button up your parents group. And then I said, pretty soon the minister came out. Who's he? Well, I leave according to your priest. He's going to conduct the service. Fine. About that time, the minister took his watch off, put it up on the podium, looked around, Charles said, what does that mean when the minister takes his watch out and puts on the podium? He said, not a damn thing, not a damn thing. So it wasn't a damn thing to put my watch up here, but I watched the crowd, the things over here, they mean something. As I said, I'm a very grateful alcoholic, and I try to live in attitude of gratitude, because I've got a lot to be grateful for. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, my gratitude cup runneth over. Because I have the privilege, the pleasure, and I consider it an undeserved honor to be one of the participants in this meeting observing Mr. Emerson's 32 years of love and service to this organization. I've known Cancer for 22 years, grown to love, admire, and respect this gentleman. There's a couple of OA statements that I think describes Cancer beautifully. His definition of love. Love is delight in the well-being of others. Clancy has demonstrated for 32 years his love in helping literally thousands of alcoholics get into the program of AA and find their well-being. Another definition is AA is love in action. And I don't know a more active, dedicated, grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous than Clancy. Clancy looks upon attitude as an active word, and he is indeed an active, grateful, dedicated member of this group. And I'm going to join everyone in this room in congratulating Clancy on 32 years of love and service, and may God continue to bless Clancy, you and yours. I do come from Washington. If you've kept up with the national news, Washington last year had the dubious pleasure of being the murder capital of the world in 1989. I'm sorry to tell you that in 1990 we've broken the record of 89, so we've got it again. Now we have a mayor, some of you may not have heard about, who allegedly has been on cocaine and booze for 12 years. However, the preamble of all you've heard tonight, we do not engage in any controversy, neither endorse or oppose any causes, so that precludes any statement of mine about Mayor Barry. However, I have a suggestion for you people who live in this area. I suggest you add to your gratitude list that Mayor Tom Bradley has not been on cocaine and booze in the last 12 years. You've got a lot to be grateful for. Let's get to the subject of evening alcoholism. At my first drink, freshman, Columbia University, 1933, I was 18 years old. For those of you who are slow in mathematics, you can stop your writing and subtract, and I'll give you the answer. The answer is 75. Thank you for the whistle. And booze became a very important part of my life. Booze became the basic ingredient in gracious living. Booze made good things better and better things best. Booze was my best friend. Now, I've been born and raised in the mines of North Carolina. My father had a drugstore. As a kid, we had all access to ice cream and candy and other stuff. And one time I got sick eating too much ice cream. One time I got sick eating too much candy. One time I got sick eating too much pop. And in the medicine, now listen, you already proved it. Too much of a good thing is bad. Not too much ice cream, too much candy, too much pop. It's moderation, moderation. That's it, another start, moderation from the early age. Well, we got to New York City, and I found that moderation was not the motif of living in New York City. Moderation was not the modus operandi in Manhattan, believe me. So I moved really away from moderation for a while, and so I heard of a lady named Mary West, who some of you know very much, you're not Pastor Mother God, married an actress. And she had a one line that just worked my whole life. Mary said, contrary to what my mother taught me, Mary said, too much of a good thing is wonderful. It was really living for that, I was brought up. And I liked Mary's interpretation more than my mother's. So I went around before, full steam ahead, booze is the best thing in the world, my best friend. And we lost for many years, as I said, the basic ingredient in gracious living, and I loved it and enjoyed it thoroughly, but I was an alcoholic, didn't know it, and alcoholism is a progressive disease, and mine progressed. 1955, as a North First career officer, pilot, Royal Officer in the Embassy in the West Oakland, news were after crossing that line of social drinking to addiction. In my opinion, I became an alcoholic. And I say I became an alcoholic in Russia because up until then I drank because I wanted to drink. And suddenly in Russia I drank because I had to drink. I had to drink to live and I had to drink to function. I had lost my choice. Russia was a hardship post, been in state 2 years, only stayed 3 years because terms of material things I never had so good before or since. My wife was having Becca serving the bed morning with a bottle. I'd sneak into the pantry, I found the pantry of a morning drink. In the pantry, I'd stash the previous night a 16-ounce goblet and three ingredients, orange juice, champagne, and vodka. On the first of the day, 7 o'clock in the morning, getting ready to go to work, the concoction, one-third orange juice, one-third champagne, one-third vodka. And I don't know about you, when I first came in, you saw a lot of slogans on the walls. Analyze, don't analyze, utilize. So I thought analyze, I've been for a long time, but I finally did. And here's my analysis. If you had a hard drink and get up in the morning with the shakes, even though the doctor says breakfast is the most important meal of the day, I couldn't face it. I couldn't even much less eat it. The thought of it was nauseating. But that orange juice with all those vitamins, that took the place of requiring for breakfast, so it took care of that item. And then you were shakes, know that you knew they were hard and dog would bit you. That 150 proof Polish vodka, that tore them those nerve veins, tore those butterflies, so I could sign my name, put them with the work. And that champagne, fulfilled a snob requirement, was present in most alcoholics. Came back to states in 58 after 3 years, wonderful years in Russia. Here I'm a debriefing story. All the high-important letters shows up to go through a horrendous training day, deep prison with all these intelligence and honesty, civilian, real top-notch people. What do you know what they're talking about? CIA, Department of State, all the military, the National Security Agency, all these experts. And I was supposed to be the expert on the Polish Air Force and the Soviet Air Force in Poland. For this person to be an expert, I have some booze inside of me. So I don't know how to carry booze with me. So I carried my booze with me in all the shelters, labeled top secret for obvious reasons. We get to the first booth, excuse me, gentlemen, up there the men's room. I was like, this is classified material in the bathroom. Dirt, dirt, much briefing, so on throughout the day. Get home at night to the beer cooler, I was starting to realize I'd consumed 1 quart of booze nipping out of that other showcase between briefings, plus the normal social cocktail that mentioned in it. And in a moment of lucidity, I realized they're beyond the realm of social drinking, and the thought that I might be an alcoholic entered my mind, because I remembered 17 years before, Fort Devens, Massachusetts, horse cavalry, sitting with brother in law Jack Alexander article in the South Evening Post, March 1, 1931, and read it to us excerpts over the bar during happy hour. And I remember I thought that those poor, how we felt about those poor alcoholics in that article. They saved their lives, they joined AA, but they could never drink again as long as we lived. Good. I fate worse than death. Horrible. Anyway, where I was, first thing I thought I might be an alcoholic, but I remember the article said these people couldn't stop drinking on their own. That's why they went to AA. So my little alcoholic mind says, if you can stop drinking, that proves you're not an alcoholic. So I stopped drinking on my own. 8 months in San Francisco for chronological reasons, not diverse from it. And most of us have if onlys in our life, and I was sharing my if only with you. I stopped drinking on May 1st, 1958 in San Francisco. 6 months later, a gentleman named Mr. Clancy Anderson stopped drinking October 31st, 1958 in Los Angeles. Now, if only I'd stayed sober, I'd be 6 months sooner to Clancy. Came that close to AA fame, but I blew it. Anyway, I was sober, dry as the gentleman said earlier, man. For 8 months in San Francisco in 1958, I thought alcohol was my problem, but it wasn't, because I'd stopped drinking, but I was miserable. I hated everybody that drank, take the phone, look at myself at the top of the mark, the beautiful San Francisco Bay Vista, jumping around, and I was stuck with a cocoa or ginger ale, trying to be charming, and I hated them. I hated the people at the Officers Club Saturday nights, the big dance, they were having fun, drinking, enjoying life, and I was on the album, but I couldn't figure this thing out. Booze obviously wasn't my problem. Why wasn't I happy? Well, as you all know, it's a threefold disease, mental, physical, and spiritual. On my own, still in the driver's seat, I've been able to cope with the physical aspects of this disease. I've stopped drinking. And ladies and gentlemen, if you stop drinking, you take care of the physical aspects of our disease. But on my own, still in the driver's seat, I have not been able to cope with the mental and spiritual aspects of our disease. So what was my problem? It wasn't booze, I'd stop drinking. My problem is sobriety. I couldn't handle the reality that went along with sober living. I had no tools, just me, myself, and I. And it wasn't enough. This is late 1958. I decided I couldn't stand up down the mountain. What to do? Well, for years, I'd used booze to lessen the pain of reality, and it had worked. Booze altered my perception of reality. It worked for many years, so I tried again. This is the fall of 58 when the liners got out Thunderbird. And that was my reintroduction to social drinking. The Thunderbird lasted about 3 or 4 weeks, as I remember, before back on the I stopped drinking more than I had done when I went on the rising, proving to myself without realizing it the progressiveness of this disease. I fought the battle for another 6 years before the Air Force finally caught up with me and took me out. Came to this program November 17, 1964 in New York City. And I finally answered all my problems. Now, I used a home group, Lenox Hill, to East Nile Street, Church of Heaven and Rest, and beautiful Manhattan. And I jumped on the boat feet,
3 meetings a day minimum.
When I was singing the third step meeting, where in the beginning, and I said, oh, how great it is, a wonderful program, and following directions, doing just what you told me. Because the third step's maturing, no bills of all time, means me, and God, it's all yours. But you told me, let go, let God, turn it over, and that's what that was doing. So I said, third step's fine, everything's good. The old timer called me back after me and said, look, I either misread or misunderstood the third step. It doesn't say turn your life over to God. It says turn your will and your life over to the care of God. So you seem to think all you have to do is stop drinking and go to meetings and God will take care of everything. It says, no way, Buster, no way. It says, this is a program of action and you are the action officer. God will never do anything for you that you can do for yourself. God does the impossible. You have to do the possible. You put it very well. Joy of living is a theme and action is the key word. He said, I know you've read the book, but I want you to read chapter 6. I want you to study chapter 6. I want you to look very carefully at the title of chapter 6 in the big book. Notice, the title is not into analysis. It's not into discussion. It's not into opinions. It's into action. Action. You are the action officer. And it's things between action and activity. See a lot of activity in there, he said. Making the coffee, setting up the chairs, cleaning the ashtrays, the MLS, GSR, going to conventions, all this stuff. That's early activity. Get involved. That's beautiful. But the action we're talking about is starting to step in. And climbing the spiritual 12-step ladder of sobriety and bringing this 12-step ladder to humility. That's the action we're talking about. So I took another look at step 3, and what I did there again was form a partnership with God. God is my senior partner, as I understand him. God is my senior partner. I'm the junior partner. It's in our partnership. The senior partners do the long-range planning, the brain work. Junior partner goes out in the world and does this day-to-day leg work, things I'm trained for. And it's a very close partnership. We don't have to go through any secretary or telephone to get to my senior partner. He's available at all times and all places, no matter where I am in the world. I'm never alone. My senior partner is always available for help, advice, support, whatever I need. It is a close partnership. I know there are deadlines next week, next month, next year. I know all those plans. But I'm not responsible for the deadlines tomorrow, next month, next week. My responsibility in implementing these long-range plans is a day at a time. And sometimes a day is too much. An hour. 5 minutes. Little hucks I can manage. And my sponsor knew me that they'd be seeing me bad days where things didn't go my way. But I had to learn acceptance. Many seemingly bad days, and I must admit there have been very few in the last few years, but they happen occasionally where things may not go our way. When you see many bad days, I said, sit down, wherever you are, just stop. For 10 seconds, remember where we have, and repeat this little psalm, the shortest psalm in the Bible, and it goes, be still, and know that I am God. Be still, and know that I am God. And when we sing any bad days, I still have occasion. I'll do whatever I need to stop. And repeating that simple little song, give me whatever strength, frame of reference, support of living thought I need to go out and accept that reality. That's what I can do, accept that reality. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're one other thing, I was in London recently, I heard a gentleman talking about the program we've seen. I don't know about America, but so we've had a lot of young people coming over here. And I see them come in, close meetings, and they said, as the Lord comes to our book says, I had a slip last week, I'm supposed to tell the group, I'm telling the group, and go, that's fine, keep coming back, keep coming back. So I see it happen again and again and again. And what they say is, after all, we're a human being, and human beings make mistakes, and after all, the big book says, we're not saints. So you're a human being, you make mistakes, so give them back. He said, some of these people using being a human being as a cop-out. He said, I'm a student of the big book. And the big book says, on page 55, that there is written in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Sometimes it is obscured by scorn, by tragedy, and by the worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is always present. Does not go better with that scripture, amen. So the way I read that, I'm a spiritual being. I was born a spiritual being. Someone knows the fundamental idea of God. So I'm a spiritual being undergoing human experiences. And I couldn't handle those human experiences for years. And finally, Bill started having me because I had no tools. But now, AA has given me the tools to handle these spiritual experiences. Makes a lot of sense to me. So maybe I was born a spiritual being too. And a few minutes I have left, one thing back to the third step. It's a gentleman named Og, God bless his soul, he's a Jesuit priest, a close friend of mine, came in about 1764. Now I'll sum this partnership with God concept up in 8 words. Without God, I can't. Without me, he won't. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Without God, I can't. Without me, he won't. Partnership with God. I would like to talk about my favorite subject, and I'm gratitude, please, and tell you what I was told when I came in here, told to be a grateful alcoholic. And I was told that if I saw a grateful alcoholic, I'd see a sober alcoholic. I was told that gratitude was the basic ingredient in humility. And humility is the basic ingredient in unity. And unity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I was told by one of the roses that came along with this program, I had to accept the thorns, because roses have thorns, the thorns of reality. I don't know about you, but now that reality has thorns, still has them. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm willing to be grateful for the thorns that make me appreciate the roses all the more. I was told there's no law of physics that two things cannot occupy the same place at the same time. Therefore, if I had a heart full of gratitude, there'd be no room in my heart or my life for anger, fear, guilt, remorse, self-pity, resentments, all those things that God and I called back in the bone. So no matter how bad it gets, no matter what they do to me, even though they are wrong and I am right. Wait a minute. Justice. They are wrong. I'm right. Shouldn't I get resentful? And my sponsor referred me to the book where Bill says, you have a little justified anger and justified resentment to those better able to handle them, namely non-alcoholics. My sponsor said, alcoholics don't want justice. Alcoholics want mercy and forgiveness. So, I was told I'm to keep that heart full of gratitude, no matter how bad they got, no matter what they did to me, if I use the tools you've given me, the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, the virtues that come from an attitude of gratitude. In other words, if I face that individual or that situation with patience and tolerance and kindness and generosity and compassion and humility, and love. If I use the tools you've given me, I can happily accept any situation or any individual that comes down the pipe. You've taught me that misery is optional. Misery is optional. Can't change reality, but I can change my attitude towards reality. That's why I try to keep an attitude of gratitude. Emphasize that word happily, not begrudgingly accept, happily accept reality, because that's what this program is all about. God living is a theme. I know we take a big view of this old guru who's sung up here and puts a big book by page number. There's one in every group, really. But on page 133, which says, God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. In the who comes in the audience, you're looking for what's God's will for me, and who I look for it. It's right there in the book. God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And in the previous page, up down in the middle of the page, it says, a wonderful sentence, I love the quote, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. Now that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a happy, joyous, free life, enjoying every day. Came along, my sponsor says, where's your gratitude list? I said, my what? It's your gratitude list. I don't have a gratitude list. I just got kicked out of the air force. Everything I've worked for, dreamed for, prayed for 25 years, gone. Flying airplanes around the world, diplomatic status, living it up, all gone. My life was total disaster, total chaos. And so you want me to look up gratitude list? I'm not going to be grateful for that. He said, yes, you do. So took out a paper and pencil. Yes, sir. I'll dictate you out, and I did. So put up hell and all of gratitude list. One, you're grateful you're alive. I'm grateful for that. Two, you're grateful you're sober. I'm grateful you're sober. Three, you're grateful you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Grateful member of the A. You're grateful you got a place to sleep tonight. Grateful sleep. You're grateful you got some food on the table. You're not starving to death. Grateful for that. You're grateful you got over 400 friends rising in immediate air in New York City you didn't even know 3 months ago. Real good friends who love you and understand you do anything they can to help you stay sober. Grateful for new friends. Grateful you got a job. Say, wait a minute. Don't have a job? Got kicked out of the office, remember? So grateful you don't have a job because you're more time to go to AA meetings. So I started my first gratitude list I was doing, and I still continue it, and it gets longer and longer and longer by the grace of God in this program. Sometime later, said, now this gratitude, there's no big deal of sitting in these meetings and the name is the so-and-so, I'm a grateful alcoholic. So words are cheap. Words are cheap. So gratitude is an action word. An action word. You have to live an attitude of gratitude. Around the world is one word, an attitude of gratitude. Ladies and gentlemen, I wouldn't presume to tell you how to live an attitude of gratitude. And yet, I'll tell you how to work the steps. As an individual person, tell in the book, I will show you how I try to live an attitude of gratitude. This morning, as I do every morning in my life, as soon as I open my eyes, crawl out of bed. Now, if someone heard me speak here on Ohio Street 20 years ago, well, they said, I'd jump out of bed. Well, I didn't jump out then. I certainly don't jump out today. So I crawled out of bed this morning, got on my knees, and I thank God for these three basics. Number one, I'm alive. Number two, I'm sober. And three, I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because after the first few things going for me, I'm in pretty good shape. Not just to put up with another day, not just to cope with another day, I'm in pretty good shape to live and thoroughly enjoy another 24 hours of the AA way of life. Because that's what it is for me. AA is not something I joined, it's something I live a day at a time. So I'm on my knees in the morning, I'm on my knees at night. Not a bad leader. That's the good Lord knowing you're grateful. What about 9 to 5? I have no real will. I have reality I have so much trouble with. How do I live an attitude of gratitude from 9 to 5? Ladies and gentlemen, prayer has become increasingly important in my life. I said I'm on my knees in the morning, I'm on my knees at night. But during the day, there's little prayers, one of the people calls them action prayers, thinking prayers, shooting prayers. To me, they're conscious contacts with God. Call it what you may. There's a little prayer on January 12th, the 24-hour book, and it became very important in my life. I'm not ignoring the surrender prayer, that's the standard. But in addition to the surrender prayer, there's a little prayer on January 12th. I pray that I may be grateful for the things I have received and do not deserve. I pray that this gratitude will make me truly humble. You know, first part of prayer reminds me from which I came. Reminds me that my sobriety is a gift from God. Second part about her miracle reminds me of the definition by Spencer Gordon many years ago. Humility, he said, humility is a recognition of the awareness of God and the nothingness of self. Humility is a recognition of the awareness of God and the nothingness of self. I was living in the Russian war some years ago, and the subject was the third step, prayer. And I quoted this, "Leave me the bondage of self." And I gave instructions of humility, and we're not formal well-meaning friends. "Well, now, you've got a lot of meetings, you've been a few, 24 hours. You deserve a little credit." He said, "No, look at the record." The record for me was, I was 49 years old, ran my life for 49 years. There were some good years back there, but we call it the numbers out. As I said, 49 years old, a hopeless, helpless alcoholic, bankrupt, mindless, physical, spiritual, financial, and kicked out of the Air Force. That was a result, and end result, when self ran the show. So I said, what I have to do is kill self. Relieve me the bond of self and kill self. And here's a quote from the God Calling book, which I also read in the morning, May 3rd, says, "Kill self now." You know, repeat that phrase, kill self. Kill self now. That's what I have to do every day. Someone gave it to me late. She said, I answered, "What's the subject?" Her classmate said, suicide. But that's what I have to do, ladies and gentlemen. I have to commit suicide a day at a time for the rest of my life. Keep that self-care. And speaking of self, I'd like to story about the early Spencer. He gave us birders, pigeons, Spencer's, whatever you call them. It's very nice. Now put this in the mirror in your bathroom so it's the first thing you see every morning. The sign reads, "You are looking at the problem." Because I'm the problem, ladies and gentlemen. There's no question about it. I'm the problem. If I can get me out of the way, and if the good Lord run my life, well, it's been working pretty good for a number of years now. So I am indeed a grateful alcoholic, grateful for this beautiful fellowship. And in closing, I can't seem to live in the knowledge of gratitude how I do it any better than just saying through prayer and through what Bill Wilson explains there in the preface to the 12 and 12. But Bill summed this whole thing up better than I can. In the preface to the 12 and 12, Bill says, "The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole." And that's what you wonderful people, this fantastic program, have given me. A happy, useful, whole life. Restored to the human race, back in the mainstream, living, loving, and thoroughly enjoying the AA way of life. So I'm indeed a grateful alcoholic, grateful to God, grateful to you, and grateful to the blessed fellowship of AA. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I can't separate those three things. God, you, and AA are inextricably intertwined in this beautiful thing we call an AA way of life. Thank you all for listening. God bless.